This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The biggest environmental concern right now is their fuel choice. And it isn't just about the air emissions and the significant water emissions. The other issue related to that is spill risk.
Growing up watching The Love Boat, some of us thought of a cruise as a romantic and exciting way to see the world. New research out of Johns Hopkins University and Stand.Earth, however, indicates that cruises don't just set a course for adventure. They deliver high quantities of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons into the air and delicate ocean habitats. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Kendra Ulrich, a senior shipping campaigner at Stand. She tells us about the hazards presented by these moving cities on the sea that float into some of the planet's most fragile ecosystems, the diesel fumes that harm the lungs of the ship's crew and passengers, and the greenwashing that the cruise lines have used in response to allegations of environmental irresponsibility. It could be enough to make Julie McCoy, Gopher, and Isaac stage a mutiny. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Kendra Ulrich. She's a senior shipping campaigner for Stand.Earth. Kendra, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So I wanted to learn a little bit more about the environmental impact of cruise ships, and you and your colleagues have been examining this. What would you say to your parents if they called you up and said, hey, we're thinking of taking a cruise. Would you want to come along?
Well, to answer that, I recently went on my first cruise. It will probably be my last one. I was accompanying Dr. Ryan Kennedy of Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And I will say that the experience was what I expected it to be, which is just simply not my cup of tea. But if my parents were going on a cruise, I would be quite concerned. And that's because there are numerous issues with cruise ships, but particularly the air pollution that we were measuring on board could be as polluted as some of the world's most polluted cities like Beijing and Santiago.
A lot of Bay Area residents became intimately aware of the AQI, the Air Quality Index numbers, and what that means. And we still, Bay Area residents are checking it. Yesterday, for example, it just leapt up into the 150s. What kind of numbers are we seeing on these cruise ships, Kendra?
Sure. Well, there's a slight difference there with the Air Quality Index. That is measuring primarily PM2.5. That is a much larger particle than what we were measuring. What Dr. Kennedy was using was an instrument called a P-TRAC. It measures ultrafine and nano-sized particulates. The ultrafine and nanoparticulate matter closely aligns with the type of particulates that we would expect to see from the combustion of diesel and heavy fuel oil, which is primarily what these ships are using. It is the world's dirtiest fossil fuel. It is the dirtiest thing that's available for marine transportation. The concerning thing about ultrafine and nano-sized particulate matter is that because it is so incredibly small, PM2.5 is already a concern because it can bypass the body's natural defenses. Ultrafine and nano-sized particulates, there are studies that are showing that they may be even more harmful to health than PM2.5, and that's because they can translocate to far regions of the body and far organs of the body. And especially when you're talking about particulate matter from the combustion of a very dirty fuel source like heavy fuel oil, this emissions has significant toxic heavy metals and other dangerous components to it that you definitely don't want in the far reaches of your body.
And you mentioned how passengers on these cruise ships are often exposed to similar air quality to some of the worst cities in the world.
give us an apples to apples comparison then, if we can't do an AQI, these nanoparticulate matters. How does that compare in Beijing, for example?
That's a great question. So the studies that we compared the cruise ship data that we had collected on board four different cruise ships was compared to studies that were done with the exact same instrument, the P-TRAC, so measuring that ultrafine and nano-level particulate matter. On a busy street in Beijing, in a study that was done in 2009, they saw particulate counts of about 30,000 or so. We routinely found at the back of the ship behind the smokestack, and the important thing to understand is that that is the area of the ship where people are encouraged to exercise. So they have running tracks, they have activity areas for families, et cetera, in the back of the ship behind the smokestacks. We were routinely finding 30,000, high 20s. At some points, we had particulate counts of about 100,000 to 157,000 parts per cubic centimeters of air. And again, going back, we're talking a busy street in Beijing at 30. So this is very, very concerning in terms of a public health risk. And it's not just, of course, the customers that are being exposed, but there are people that are living and working on these ships long term. You know, some people that are on for the majority of the year because they're working there, and the people that are being required to be in that environment may be being exposed to extremely high levels of dangerous constituents in this particulate matter.
When you ran your test, did you see a real stark contrast between the front of these ships and the back, or is it pretty mm-hmm. uniform?
No, that's the important finding of this study, is that, we did the test in the front of the ship to get a baseline, because there's always going to be some, background particulate matter in the air, suspended salt particles, suspended water particles, some dust or other things coming from land-based sources potentially. Each test was done in a series of three. So in the front of the ship to get that baseline sample, where you would not expect to have any of the ship exhaust while it's underway, while it's moving forward, because, of course, the wind currents are creating a backdraft, carrying pollution to the back of the ship. And then two places on the back of the ship. So one in the upper stern area, the upper back deck behind the smokestacks, again, frequently where the exercise areas were located, and one in the lower stern area. And this is an area where, of course, we would see a lot of swimming pools and other lounge areas as well on most of these ships. The difference between the front of the ship and the back of the ship were significant. We had measurements up to 8 times greater in the back of the ship than in the front of the ship. It also smells very much like petroleum product. So it is very clear, of course, that the source of the particulate matter is primarily from the ship's exhaust itself. The readings were so high, though, that even I was surprised. We suspected there might be a problem. We had no idea going into it that it was going to be this significant.
And how do you think this would maybe compare if you looked at the various fleets of, let's say, a Princess and a Carnival? How standard do you think these findings would be? Or would there be a wide variance, Kendra?
Well, each of the ships is a bit different. Each ship has its own design. We did actually test ships from three different cruise lines. Now, we were testing ships that were all owned by Carnival Corporation, and that's a really important thing to understand. There's a lot of different cruise lines that people think are separate lines that are actually all the same company, effectively. So Princess Cruises, Holland America, and Carnival Cruise Line are all owned by Carnival Corporation. They own 10 brands worldwide. And operate in oceans around the world. And again, most of these ships are being, powered by one of the world's dirtiest fossil fuels. What we found in these studies, we tested, of course, the two Carnival ships, one Holland America ship and one Princess ship, that what we consistently found was that there was extremely elevated levels of particulate matter in the back of the ship. Some of them, for example, the Princess line, were exceedingly high. The smokestack was very, very close to where, I mean, literally there was a basketball court behind the smokestack. There was mini golf and putt-putt behind the smokestack, nearly at eye level, just above our heads. But on all the ships, we had very, very high levels, concerning levels, levels that are comparable to Beijing and other places.
Can you foresee some kind of a class action suit for these employees? I mean, we're talking about a customer, as you mentioned, who might just be on there for a week or two versus somebody who's on there 40 weeks a year.
As far as I know, there's been no epidemiological studies of cruise ship employees. One of the very challenging things about this is that most of these cruise lines hire people from developing countries that have weak, employee protection laws. And so there are very few protections for the people that are working on these ships in terms of, legal avenues they could take to protect their health. In addition to that, one of the things that's quite shocking about all of these cruise ships is that they require, for example, all of their passengers to waive their right to a class action lawsuit, to participate in class action lawsuits. That was something that, we're taking a look at because of the exposure of both employees as well as passengers. And we're quite surprised to see that, they preemptively waive their right. And the vast majority of people getting on these ships are not reading the very lengthy, terms and conditions contracts that they're agreeing to. And they may not even know that they've waived these critical legal rights until, something happens on the ship and they need some legal protection or legal recourse.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kendra Ulrich. She is a senior shipping campaigner for Stand. So Kendra, we were talking about the health concerns that you and your colleagues have for passengers and employees for the cruise line industry. What about the carbon footprint? I imagine that's vast, not just from the diesel fuel that they use, but also the amount of buffets and food waste aboard these things. Can you kind of give us a snapshot of your findings there?
Sure. That is one of the things that we are asking Carnival Corporation to address. We are asking them to commit to science-based climate targets. Right now, they have an intensity reduction target. So if you go on their website, it looks like they are reducing the amount of carbon they're putting into the atmosphere. They have this very nice downward trending line on their website. That comes with an important caveat. It is based upon available lower berth, meaning the number of people that the ship can host and the kilometers traveled. And so what that means is that the more that they expand their ships, the bigger the ships get. So as long as they are reducing the amount per person, they can continue to release more carbon emissions while still showing a downward trending line. So Carnival's carbon emissions have been increasing for over a decade while their, sustainability report shows it decreasing.
Yes, they claim they've achieved a 26.3% reduction relative to their 2005 baseline and have reached their target ahead of schedule. That's what's on their website. What does that mean?
Exactly. That means that they have reduced their intensity of carbon production. So the amount of carbon that is produced per passenger has been reduced, but their absolute carbon emissions has increased over that same period, significantly increased by about 20% over that same period. We see this across the board. There was, for example, a report of the overall cruise industry that was showing that their intensity reduction over several years was 6%, while their absolute emissions increased by 6%.
So this intensity of CO2 is a red flag for anybody who's kind of trying to read between the lines on and determine what a company's carbon footprint might actually be. Is that fair to say? Intensity of CO2 is kind of a get out of jail free word.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. So the really important thing when reading these is to understand what exactly they're measuring. And in this case, what they're measuring is the amount of CO2 per passenger, basically. Passenger capacity. It doesn't even have to be the number of people that are actually on the ship, because quite frequently the ships are not booked to full capacity. And for example, the room that I was in was a tiny little room. It had two twin beds. Apparently, you could also have a third rollout bed or something. So they said that that room could fit five people. Well, five people would have been incredibly cramped in there. With a rollout bed, but it's not clear. Were they measuring the CO2 intensity based upon the fact that they could have crammed five people into this tiny little room? That's not clear. And the cruise lines certainly aren't disclosing that. We are certainly for, you know, ships being more efficient, but as long as it's a part of a strategy to achieve absolute reduction targets, it is not acceptable to, you know, achieve intensity reductions while increasing your carbon emissions. That defeats the purpose. That's not the way that science works.
And then we're just talking about fuel. What about other areas of waste management? On their website, they say that they're continuing to reduce waste generated by their shipboard operations by 5% relative to their 2010 baseline. And I've read numbers that estimate that around 30% of the food brought onto these ships is wasted. How does that square with these numbers that Carnival Cruise Lines is touting?
To be quite candid, the food waste issue is not something that we've been focused on, but it is, of course, a significant concern. On the ship I was on, I mean, they were still using styrofoam coffee cups. So, you know, in terms of the actual policies that they're implementing, we are, of course, encouraging them to reduce their waste, and their colleague organizations that have been much more engaged with this that we work with. But Stand has not been particularly focused on food waste in particular. In terms of other waste streams, though, I mean, these ships are pretty much, they're a floating city. And so you have a lot of different waste products. It's not just, you know, the fuel that is the environmental impact. One of the biggest waste streams from these ships, there's sort of two main concerning ones. One is gray water discharges. A lot of folks on these ships are senior citizens. They're taking a lot of medications. There are microplastics from doing laundry on board the ship and other things, and that these water discharges are going directly into the ocean. The other very, very concerning waste stream from these ships is the discharge of scrubber effluent. So Carnival has installed on most of its ships exhaust gas cleaning systems or SOx scrubbers, sulfur scrubbers. They have installed these so that they can continue to burn heavy fuel oil inside emissions control areas near the North American and Caribbean coasts, as well as in Europe. Unfortunately, those scrubbers are open loop scrubbers. They're effectively taking pollution out of the air emissions and discharging it directly into the ocean with minimal treatment. That means heavy metals, those polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, particulate matter, and other things are being discharged, into the sea. This is wholly not acceptable. Of course, you know, removing pollution from air emissions and discharging it into the ocean is not a solution to the pollution problems that are created by using heavy fuel oil.
Love, exciting and new. come aboard. We're expecting you and love, life's sweetest reward. Let it flow, it floats back to you. Soon we'll be making another run. The love boat promises something for everyone.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Kendra Ulrich. She is a senior shipping campaigner for Stand. So we're talking about these cruise ships where it's pretty much the public's chance to go on these cities on the sea, as you mentioned. But whether we decide to take a cruise or not, there's still huge amounts of these enormous cities on the sea, crisscrossing the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Indian Oceans to deliver cars and steel and goods of every shape and size. How big a piece of the puzzle is this cruise ship concern that you and your colleagues have at Stand, or is it just because it's the only way that consumers and the public can really kind of make a direct impact that you're focusing on it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously the vast majority of the shipping sector is your cargo ships as well as fishing vessels. We are focused on cruise ships for several reasons. Number one, these ships burn an absolutely enormous amount of fuel. They burn about 200 tons of fuel every day. The gray water discharges and other things that I mentioned earlier, these are much greater volumes.
Greater volumes than like a tanker?
Right. Because you have people showering and doing laundry and doing dishes and all of those sorts of things that you wouldn't have nearly the amount of people. I mean, we're talking ships that can host over 3,000 people compared to a cargo ship, which would have its crew.
I was always curious what kind of size crew these big tankers or cargo ships have. Can you give us kind of a ballpark estimate?
I mean, it really depends on the ship. Maybe a few hundred per ship. It's not, you know, there's not going to be the level of crew necessary that you would have for a cruise ship where you've got all the staff that you're waiting on and you're cooking for people and you're cleaning rooms. And, you know, again, it is like having a city on the sea. The other thing that's very concerning about the cruise industry is that unlike cargo ships, cruise ships travel to some of the world's most pristine environments and important cultural sites. You know, cruise ships, you know, are going and directly visiting UNESCO World Heritage sites like the Norwegian fjords. You know, they're going to the Great Barrier Sea or Great Barrier Reef. They're traveling to areas that are very concerning to have these types of pollutions from an ecological perspective. In addition to that, the local pollution can be so significant that it impacts, you know, the ability of enjoying these spaces. So, for example, in Norway, they are moving forward with having their fjords be zero emissions areas. And the reason for that is so many of these cruise ships are going in there. And because they are, by, you know, definition, I mean, surrounded by mountains. I mean, that's what they are. And so it was trapping the pollution inside the fjord that people on the ships couldn't even see, you know, the geological features that they were going to see because the smog was so intense. You'd have, you know, multiple ships there idling at one time. In addition to that, one thing I do just want to highlight as well, and this sort of touches on it, is that the risks are not only to people that are on board the ship or that are working on the ship or, you know, taking a cruise. The risks of this air pollution that was measured in this study is a serious concern for coastal communities and a serious concern for port communities. These ships, well, all ship emissions globally, 70% of them are released within 250 miles of shore. studies unrelated to the Johns Hopkins researchers study that was just released last week have shown that the emissions from ship's exhaust can be attributed 60,000 deaths annually. Premature deaths can be attributed to exposure to ship exhaust. So this is a very, very big concern. And that's, again, within 250 miles of shore and that pollution being carried inland. When we're talking about cruise ships, most of the time, you do have some of your transatlantic and your other trans-Pacific cruises, but the vast majority of cruises are actually just going along the coast. So burning the world's dirtiest marine fuel, releasing enormous amounts of particulate matter and traveling very close to coastal communities. So this is a major concern, public health concern, from a lot of different perspectives. This is a major concern, public health concern, from a lot of different perspectives.
And what can listeners do besides just not take a cruise, Kendra? Maybe you can kind of give our listeners some ideas on how to take action.
Yeah, so if you go on the stand.earth website, right now we are running a clean cruising pledge. The clean cruising pledge really is telling Carnival that unless they clean up their act and stop burning heavy fuel oil, that, you know, this is going to impact their bottom line. And so it's basically saying to Carnival, we're not going to go on your ships until you clean up. It is part of a global effort. We are part of the Clean Up Carnival Coalition. That is organizations from North America, Europe, and elsewhere that are all putting pressure on Carnival Corporation to clean up its act, to commit to science-based climate targets, to stop using heavy fuel oil. And these will be submitted directly to the CEO. The other thing that you can do that would be a huge help is, getting the message directly to the company. So tweeting directly at the company. The biggest environmental concern right now is their fuel choice. And it isn't just about the air emissions and the significant water emissions. The other issue related to that is spill risk. If heavy fuel oil spills, it is so thick that they actually have to heat it in order to get it to flow enough to go through the engine. This is a tar-like sludge product. And if it spills, it creates a very long-term contamination scenario, much longer than you would expect from diesel or other lighter fuels. It sinks to the bottom of the ocean. It is devastating to ocean life. Cruise ship accidents do happen. One happened, with Costa Cruise Line, also a Carnival brand, in Italy a few years back. And so the threat to the environment, to public health and human health from the cruise ships, the biggest thing, of course, is their fuel choice.
Kendra Ulrich, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Grant Green, Smokey Robinson, and Jack Jones.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.